Good, well, thanks for coming.
Nice to have you here. I'm Bob Keeley, and I'm a professor of education here at Calvin, and I'm a collaborating partner, is that the phrase, with the Worship Institute.
They change it, so yeah, we always look in the book and say,
see what,
okay, what does he know?
But we've been involved with Worship Institute things for a number of years now, and that's been a real joy to have that be part of what I do also.
And I'm Laura Keeley, and I'm Bob's wife.
And we do live together, even though it appears not.
Yeah, could start a whole new rumors now. But yes, and I'm the director of children's ministries at our church, which is 14th Street Christian Reformed Church in Holland. And we actually do live in Holland, so Bob does the 45-minute drive into Calvin, even in this kind of crappy weather. And this week it has been a challenge to get in. Now he's blaming tennis elbow on it, so it's a whole new experience. But anyway, we're glad you're here and enjoying January with us.
Right. So we're going to talk about the Psalms and kids and teens. And for us, this has been a really interesting journey for a couple of years. In fact, the remote thing doesn't work, so I'll have to do it manually. It's so hard to be a professor. I have to walk all the way over here. So when I was young, I went to a Christian school in northern New Jersey, where John Bidson was actually one of my students. I'll run back to teach a little bit later.
So that's why all the gray here.
Yeah, John's responsible for a good part of it. But I went to Eastern Christian Elementary School, and I can remember, it feels like it was, you know, third, fourth, fifth grade, whatever, we all had to take turns doing devotions before lunch. And so I was a pretty typical kid at that age, so I gave great thought into what I was going to do for devotions. I thought about it the entire time, from between when the teacher said, okay, Bob, it's your turn for devotions today, and when I actually got up to do it. So there I stood, right? I had to do something, so I did what almost all of my classmates did, and I randomly picked a psalm. Because the psalms were safe, at least that's the way I viewed it, right? You didn't have to worry about big names you had to pronounce. You didn't have to worry about coming in the middle of a story or getting one too long as you avoided Psalm 119. and it seemed to me like you could almost stop reading anywhere in a psalm, you were still okay. And so you can always depend on it just saying some nice things about God. Psalms, great, no problem. So unfortunately, it took many, many years for me to sort of lose that childhood understanding of the Psalms. And we had a workshop at our church. A friend of ours, Deborah Reinstra, who also works here at Calvin, came and talked about Psalms. And she said some really interesting things. And she said, you know, you should consider memorizing psalms. And she gave us a list of a couple of psalms to memorize. So Laura took that idea and said, our family should memorize this psalm. We have four children. We should memorize the psalm together. Well, you know, what can I say at this point? I can't speak against God.
Laura.
Yeah, or Laura. Actually, could be told that's more funny. So I said, well, okay, fine. And she said, let's memorize Psalm 133. So I looked at Psalm 133, and I said, well, you know, why did you pick a dumb one? And she said, because it's short. It's of the whole list that Deborah gave us. This is the shortest one, and I want us to succeed. I want us to actually do something that we can accomplish. So you know, how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity. It's like precious oil poured out on the head, running down on the beard, running down on Aaron's beard, down on the collar of his robe. It's as if the dew of Hermon were falling on Zion, for that's how the Lord bestows his blessings, even life forevermore. So I memorized it. I still thought it was a dumb one. I mean, what's the point, right? Okay, it's, let's see, it's nice when people get along. Really, did it take all those lines to do that? I mean, it's a short psalm, but still. But I did it because I was afraid. It was within the next 6 months or so, I took my very first international trip. I flew to Hungary and then traveled to Ukraine to work with some Christian teachers there. They had just gotten their schools back from the government, and they really didn't know how to do Christian education. So a colleague and I went to Ukraine, and we worked with the teachers there, and we were going to work with them on a Friday and then again on a Saturday. And so Saturday morning, before our workshop started, we went across the creek to the Reformed Church there in Nazh Dobrin. And it was cold. It was spring break. I brought a leather jacket, which was a nice leather jacket, maybe a little bit heavy for spring break in Michigan. Turned out not so heavy for spring break in Ukraine. It was 17 degrees. No heat in the church. They left the door open. Still baffles me. And so there I sat in this church. All the men on one side, all the women on the other side, all the guests in the center, and of course, since we're the American professors, we're very honored guests, so they put us right in the front row. So I'm there, my colleague is there, the missionary who's helping us is over, and so this whole service is in Hungarian, and I don't understand a word of Hungarian. And I can't hear the translator. So there I sit in 17 degrees Fahrenheit, freezing. I recognize a couple of the hymn tunes, I recognize nothing else. So I had an hour, a good hour, to sit and ponder. And as I looked around, I thought, and this was March of 2002. September 11 of 2001 was just a few months before that. And if you remember, President Bush said, this is the date that we're going to start bombing. And so this is your deadline. And between the deadline when they actually started bombing is when we flew there. So it was really empty plane. So I was a little bit nervous, right? We could see planes going overhead.
United States Army planes.
Military.
To do the bombing.
To go over. So there I sit in this church. And I'm kind of looking around, looking at these people who are quite different from me. Looking at this pastor who's quite different from my pastor. Hearing a language that's completely different from my language. And I thought, this is pretty cool. I'm here a third of the way around the world, sitting amidst God's people in this new place. And not just God's people, but God's people who spoke Christianity with the same accent that I did, right? There are Reformed Christians here in this little town in Ukraine. And as I looked around, I thought, how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity. And I spent the next 40 minutes thinking about, you know, what it means to be anointed and to feel that oil like it's God's blessing, sort of so rich that it's dripping down, and I actually got it. For the first time, I thought, the Psalms is cool, why didn't anybody even tell me this before? I shared that with Laura, and it was like, duh. That started a journey of us exploring the Psalms and seeing the riches that are there. And then since our jobs are working with children and thinking about faith formation and faith development, we thought, you know, it's too bad that kids don't know this stuff. Now, this is adult literature, right? I mean, some of it's really, really deep stuff, and it's not for the faint of heart, and it's not for the young of heart necessarily, but kids really don't get a chance to explore the riches of the Psalms. They grow up maybe like I did, thinking it's just some nicey nice God language that you can read, you know, when you're stuck for something. And so that started our maybe 5 or 6 year project now, of thinking about how we can help kids understand what's going on in the Psalms a little more. Yeah, Laura's job is to tell me to wrap it up and move on.
And I'm good at it.
First of all, why Psalms? And I feel like I don't need to convince you that Psalms are good, but the Psalms is one of the few places in the Bible that show us how to talk back to God. I don't mean talk back in a mean kid way. I mean how to respond to God, right? So much of the Bible is God talking to us, and the Psalms give us examples of how to talk
to
God.
Could be in a mean kid way.
It sometimes is in a sort of a snotty, you're not doing your part way. They are the songs of God's people. They have been the songs of God's people for thousands of years, and we want to make sure that we get that. The people of Israel knew the Psalms well, including children and teens. Is this where we talk about the Psalm 22? Yes, it is.
You were going to... Kaiser?
I'll get that in a second.
Okay.
When Jesus is on the cross, he says the first line of Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? If we don't know the Psalms well, we read that and we say, Jesus is asking God why God the Father has forsaken God the Son. Which, if you think about that, you think, wow, that's how can that happen, right? They're three in one. If they're one, how can they one forsake the other? That you have to go through some pretty significant theological gymnastics to make that work. If you understand that Jesus' audience knew the Psalms really, really well, like if I say the Lord is my shepherd, most of us know exactly where I'm going, right? Many of us memorized Psalm 23, perhaps when we were children, perhaps recently. We certainly know the content of Psalm 23. When Jesus said the first line of Psalm 22, those people knew the content of Psalm 22. Psalm 22 is a psalm that basically says, it might look like God has forsaken me, but he hasn't. And so when Jesus is saying, my God, why have you forsaken me from the cross? He's doing a shorthand version of, it looks like God has forsaken me, but he hasn't. He has remained with me through this. The people of Israel knew those well. Herm Kaiser was a chaplain in Vietnam. He was in charge of all the chaplains in Europe or something like that. I mean, he briefed the president. He's a cool guy. He hangs around here, which is fun. Herm worked with a lot of soldiers, and he talks about moral injury. I think he's doing a workshop on that.
I think he is.
That here. He says, moral injury is not a sign of illness. It's a sign of health, mental health. If you have to do some of the things you have to do in war, you get this moral injury. And it's a really deep pain that some of these people feel. And he has found the Psalms to be incredibly useful. He would give them to some of the soldiers. They'd say, well, why wasn't this in my Bible? It actually was. He just didn't see it there. And so the Psalms have many, many uses that are really helpful for us. They remind us that... Am I still supposed to be talking? Okay. Notice how I asked. I'm pretty sure that I'm in charge. I have to check. The Psalms remind us who we are. We are God's people. They remind us that God takes us as we are. If you really read the Psalms, and many of these Psalms are laments, many of these Psalms are the kind of thing where if kids talk to us that way, we feel like they're being a little bit disrespectful. That's the way the Psalms are. God takes us the way we are. That's a really good reminder.
Two-thirds of them are lament. Well, we don't use them that way. We think it's all about the Lord is my shepherd. No, two-thirds are laments, where you're saying to God, what in the world is going on? It's not, you know, what are you doing? I feel alone. Those feelings are there. And sometimes it's expressed a lot worse than what you and I would do. And this is how God is telling us we can address it. But it does resolve itself and tells you what to do next as well.
All of those laments, except for one, by the way, have a turn in them. We'll talk about that. The Psalms give us language that we can use to get at some complex faith issues. They speak to our emotions. John Whitfield, in his excellent book, The Biblical Psalms of Christian Worship, the Psalms often engage us more personally and more intimately than other forms of biblical literature, which I think is true. That's the sort of thing that I figured out finally.
Throughout our presentation, you know, I inserted some pictures that our kids in our church have done. We've given them paper when our church did a grant on the Psalms, and then we would do just a verse when the pastor was preaching on a certain psalm in the back of church. We'd give them a piece of paper with a verse on that verse on it, and let them respond. Either this, I think it was, we'd give them a couple colors. It'd vary according to what, you know, what whether it was joyful or sad. We'd give them sad colors, or you know, not. We'd limit their art choices, pens and stuff. But these are some of the artwork that our kids have done to express what they heard said in worship that day. So you can just kind of catch what can happen when you just, we didn't give them directions, we just gave them the tools. and this stuff came through.
You think that psalm spoke to something in this, was it a young teenager, I think?
It's Jenna.
Okay. Oh.
Fourth grader.
Jenna's case, she's a young teenager.
Okay.
One of the things that I really like about my job is I teach a course in teaching religion to children and adolescents. Tyler took that course. And Tyler had to tell two Bible stories over the course of that semester. And I listen to one of them, so I give them one chance to practice on their friends, and when they're better at it, I listen. So I hear every student tell a Bible story every semester. And I get somewhere between 30 and 40 students a semester, and I've been doing this course for 15 years. So I've heard a lot of Bible stories. And I've heard a lot of Bible stories over and over and over again. And what's cool about telling Bible stories is you see things in a different perspective, right? Somebody puts it in a different perspective. And one of my students was talking about Jacob wrestling with the angel. Talked about how Jacob got a new name, Israel. And unfortunately, my mind started going. I didn't hear a lot of the rest of the story. No, your story was it, Tyler? And I started thinking, you know, when God changed Abram's name to Abraham, he's always called Abraham after that. When God changed Saul's name to Paul, he's always called Paul after that. When God changes Jacob's name to Israel, he's always called Jacob after that. Huh. Well, but his children became a nation who were called Israel. And why was Jacob's name changed to Israel? Because Israel means they wrestle with God. God named his people, they wrestle with God. He didn't name them, they always do what I say. He named them, they wrestle with me. If we needed more evidence that God wants us to wrestle with him, this is just, the Psalms help give us more of that evidence too. The Psalms is full of people wrestling with God. I think this is an incredibly valuable thing for teenagers to learn, right? That God doesn't expect us to just be nice and nice all the time. God wants us to wrestle with him. A friend of mine points out that you don't wrestle with people you don't like. You box. That was interesting. Yeah, I'm
well, that was a moment there.
Yeah, the moment's over.
Bono, from U2. U2's a rock band, for those of you who are either too young to care or too old to know. Bono wrote the introduction to Eugene Peterson's first translation of the Psalms. What became the Message was the Book of Psalms, and Bono wrote the introduction. Bono read this book to his dad at his dad's bedside when he was dying. And Bono wrote in this introduction, "Words and music did for me what solid, even rigorous religious argument could never do. They introduced me to God. Not belief in God, more an experiential sense of God. Over art, literature, girls, my mates, the way to my spirit was a combination of words and music. And as a result, the Book of Psalms always felt open to me and led me to the poetry of Ecclesiastes and the Song of Solomon, the Book of John." I love this next line. "My religion could not be fiction, but it had to transcend fact. It could not be, it could be mystical, but not mythical." This is powerful stuff. Postmoderns also, I think, are going to approach Scripture differently than we moderns do. And I think, you know, my generation is kind of on the cusp. I think it depends on your personality, whether you can be a postmodern modern or a modern postmodern. But for my parents and their parents, for example, systematic theology was it, at least in Western culture. For postmoderns, systematic theology doesn't do it quite as much. I think the Psalms and the narratives, Old and New Testament narratives, are going to have a lot more. It's going to speak to these young people more than perhaps the letters of Paul, for example, which are more systematic. Ancient texts and practices resonate with them, and authentic doesn't have to mean trendy. Actually, this is our postmodern oldest daughter, Bethany, looking very postmodern. She stands there against the wall. and this is our middle son, Brian. Worship is habit forming. If you've read James K.A. Smith's Desiring the Kingdom, he talks a lot about that. The Psalms are also habit forming, right? So one of my my second thoughts about the Psalms is, oh, good, I could use the Psalms to reflect how I feel. And I later realized that, you know, the Psalms help me learn how to feel and learn how to talk to God. So it's not like I'm feeling sad when I find a sad psalm. It's, I read a sad psalm, oh, that gives me insight into where I go now when I need it. And so the Psalms are also habit-forming. So they're both formative and reflective. They can also have an impact on the faith formation of kids by helping them to see that faith is not just a Sunday morning thing. That this faith has a real connection to their real lives in very real ways.
Okay, tell the story.
Which story? Yes. I thought it came later.
I don't think so.
We'll save it for later if we have time.
Okay.
Are I still going or are you on now?
Well, the problem with the Psalms is we don't know them. We as adults really don't know them. So it's very hard to transfer that to children. But in another sense, none of us know them, so we can learn them together. This is cool, because when you come across a new insight, so will they. So you can learn this together. You're not alone. There are 150 of them, and part of the problem is they're titled by numbers. Not real easy to remember that and put that in your brain with the assimilation and accommodation and all that. It's a number.
If they were called the one with the shepherd, that would help.
Then you could, you know, the one with the refuge. So, but anyway, they are not a narrative. Children love narratives. They're not. We don't know Hebrew. Some of them are ABC poems. Well, we don't know Hebrew. That doesn't help us. Some of them have a lot of fun rhymings going on, where it'll have duplicate rhymes in the you know, like the Sally sells, she seashells, that type of song. They'll have that. We don't know Hebrew, so we're missing those cues too. And the Hebrew people would have caught that. And they're emotionally mature. And yeah, some of them have some very mature ideas. Doesn't mean they shouldn't be there. And they can train abstract ideas, which for a child is difficult. The psalm illustrated here is Psalm 62. He is my fortress, I will never be shaken. And in the Sunday school curriculum we used, that was the verse. So the teacher has this child, Jesus, you know, let's say this, he is my fortress, I will never be shaken. Who is the he? That's Jesus, and he'll never be shaken. And the four-year-old little girl says, how can a person be a building? He is my fortress. So, yeah, they're abstract. Maybe that wasn't a great choice in that curriculum. Of course, she's going to grow up. She'll get it. But, yeah, it's not a real obvious connect for them. But the other, we mentioned this, third of them are laments. So, a third? Did I say two-thirds?
You said two-thirds.
Oh, take it back.
I didn't want to disagree with you on the time. But.
Yeah. Dear. Dear. Okay, next one. What we tend to do in church is we tend to use the happy ones. This is a listing. Now, I'm a director of children's ministries. This came from one of the churches. I'm on a network with other children's ministry peoples. And we said, what do you do for memory work, was the question. And which is a good question, because most people do absolutely nothing. But this was, church wanted to outline, they sent an outline of what they do each year. So if you're year one, you learn the Old Testament in the fall, and then Luke 2, then the New Testament books, and Psalm 23. Okay? Second year, you learn the Lord's Prayer, Luke 2, and then you learn Proverbs, Galatians, and the Ten Commandments. Now, those are happy. I think it's trust in the Lord with all your heart, and Galatians is
the fruit of the Spirit. Peace, joy.
Here's year three. You're on 1 Corinthians. I think that's the love thing, which if you were in session this morning, you probably heard a lot about. Luke 2, and then Joshua, I think, is... be strong and courageous. Psalm 139, verse 14. What is?
I praise you because I'm fearfully wonderfully made.
Yeah. Colossians. So, wherever you are.
Whatever you do with your heart, working for the Lord.
Work with your heart. Nothing to express I'm sad. This is all 3 years of things they're memorizing, which I'm happy in the Lord. What do children do when they're abused? What do children do when their parents get divorced? What are they going to do when grandma dies or grandpa dies? These are things that happen in their lives every day. What are they going to do when their classmate dies or gets leukemia? How are you going to explain that to them? This is what we've taught them. We're shortchanging them. We need to give them something now so that when somebody dies, they can say, God, where are you? Why, Lord? And give them the words to say, but I will trust in you. But why? I don't get it. And the Psalms will do that for them.
Right. And these are all good verses, right? I mean, we don't want to speak against the Bible.
Don't tell people at church.
but here's, you know, 3 years of work, and they've learned nothing but happy.
Will any of these be available online, the slides? Is there a way to make it?
They can be. So why don't you send me an email and I'll send you the link.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So then our question is, okay, if the Psalms are worth doing and kids think differently than adults do, how can we bridge that gap, right? How can we give kids the Psalms without dumbing them down? We want to make them concrete, child-friendly, bite-sized, and approachable, but still have that beauty and meaning that's inherent in them. It turned out that's a challenging question. The answer was not obvious. Our goal is to have our kids know the Psalms so well that they can improvise on them, much the way a jazz musician improvises on music. The Song of Mary, right, when Mary was on her way to Elizabeth, she sang, "My soul will magnify the Lord," right? Mary is improvising on Hannah's song when she was pregnant with Samuel. So she knew Hannah's song well enough that she could riff on it. She could start there and then make it hers. And so you've got this dual thing, right? She's speaking scripture and she's speaking her heart at the same time. That's what we want from our kids. We want kids to maybe be able to start their prayers with, "Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. But I'm really sort of irritated at you right now." We want them to be able to do that. So that's our goal. That's what we're trying to get to.
So part of our project was to figure out, how do we do this? How do we make it more accessible to kids? How do we give them access points, places where they can access the Psalms? We don't want to change your Sunday school curriculum. Stories are extremely important for kids. But are there other places where we can work to integrate the Psalms?
That picture, we live in a small city with a lake, Lake Michigan for one thing, but also another lake. And there's these places where you can get to the lake, right? So that's what we're trying to build, these places so you can get to the Psalms.
Well, the picture kind of showed that. I'm just saying. So we approached, as we started the project, and I think I had this next four slides in your notes. We approached it saying, okay, if we have kids at different age levels and we have one Psalm, can we just take one Psalm and hit it for different people at different ages? That was our first challenge. So we started with Psalm 107, which is, "Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever." If we did that with a very young child, what might we do? We might have to explain about endures, but we could just learn that first verse, where we could do repeat after me, "Give thanks to the Lord, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good," those types of things. Activities related to thanks and love, you know, repetition I have there, but where they walk around the room and, you know, "Give thanks to the Lord, I'm thankful for this desk. Give thanks to the Lord, I'm thankful for my clothing. Give thanks to the Lord, I'm thankful for this desk. I'm thankful for the warm room." You can do that kind of a play, too, with a young child, using this psalm to make it more personable. So then we went up to the next age group, which is 6 to 10. Okay, you can still do the same things we said before, but maybe now we would take a larger portion, which is verse 1 through 9, and talk about why the people in these verses were sad.
This psalm is episodic, right? So if you know what's going on 1 through 9, that's going on later. So we're doing one episode here.
Right. Just taking the one episode, what makes them sad, talk about what makes you sad, bring it into their person. What does God do for you? You could write and draw those types of things.
learn the first verse. And if you're going to write it in a fancy way, we were thinking of the, we use the Timothy Botts books quite a bit, where, okay, if you're writing the word mad, make it look mad, those types of things, trying to get that some of the emotion with a word. So, okay, what do we do if they were older? Well, here we took the first 9 verses, we would take them and, well, use the whole psalm and give them highlighters and say, okay, where the author's in trouble, put it in blue, where it's God's response, highlight in green, and in yellow, put your thanks. So we're giving them the tools so that they can do this. Then write the pattern for people of your age. First express your trouble, then express God's response, and then give thanks. So right, we're handed them the tools of how God, it is in the Bible, now do it yourself. And pick one verse from the whole thing. Another way of looking at it is trying to think conceptually, can we get them to think of which verse summarizes the whole psalm? If you could pick one, and then let them talk about it. Which verse did you pick? Which verse did you pick? And get them to start talking about what the psalm is.
So notice, those of you who are educators, notice the scaffolding here, right? We said, here's what's going on in this psalm, you find it. For older kids, we took away the scaffolding.
So for older kids, it was, okay, find the pattern. Write your own pattern. You could create a reader's theater, do a paraphrase, or read it in the Psalms now or the Message to compare how another author might write it. So after we had done that, we thought, okay, you can do this for different ages. Now where do we go? So this is where we went.
So one of the things we thought is, okay, some of these psalms actually connect pretty well with Bible stories. Sunday school curricula has lots of Bible stories in it, and we don't want to take those out. We really don't. We think those narratives are really important developmentally for kids. Can we match some of these psalms to some of these stories? Well, Psalm 51 matches very nicely with David and Bathsheba, right? In fact, the superscript at the top of the psalm says this was written when David had his incident with Bathsheba. Now, those things were added many years later, so whether it actually is or not is an open question, but the fact is it works. We did an interesting thing. Actually, I stole this from somebody else. I don't know who, so I'll just say it. So I sometimes do. Had some high school kids, and so I did the story of David and Bathsheba with them, and then I said, if you were going to write a prayer to God at this point, what would you write? And had them write their prayer, and then the couple who were willing to volunteer to read read theirs, and so I said, okay, now let's read Psalm 51. Let's see what it looks like David said. It turns out the students are often much harder on themselves than David was. David very quickly goes to, yeah, I really screwed up, but God, you know what, you're pretty great. And the students didn't really get there. They just did, I'm a worm stuff.
Yeah, but they were much lower.
Yeah.
They sunk a lot lower in their words than the psalmist does. I'm terrible, you know, and on and on. Well, no, the psalmist doesn't stay there. He moves.
We've already talked about Jesus on the cross with Psalm 22. Psalm 1, blessed is the one who does not walk in step of the wicked or stand in the way the sinners take or sit in the company of mockers. So this is about loving the law, right? So, well, how about pairing that with the giving of the law, the story of God giving the law to Moses? Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Men are saying of me, God will not deliver him, but you, Lord, are a shield around me. David fleeing from Absalom is a story you can connect that with. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? Psalm 13 is a psalm that I think of often. That third line there, how long must I wrestle with my thoughts? Just a little over a year ago, I had some pain in my left arm. And at first I thought, oh, this is just tennis elbow. And it persisted. And I was lying in bed all the night, and I thought, pain in the left arm. That sounds like a symptom of something heart-related. So there it is, 2 o'clock in the morning. So I did what any reasonable person would do. I got up and checked the internet. And I found all of these symptoms that I had. And then I found a whole bunch more symptoms, which I then proceeded to get. And so there I am, lying in my bed, wrestling with my thoughts, right? So the next morning I got up, I called, actually I had a meeting with the CSW staff that morning. I called and said, nope, I I have a thing. I'm going to go see a doctor. And I called doctor's office. I got in as soon as I could. I got in there, and he checked me over. It turns out that I had tennis elbow. You have done that too, haven't you? You have wrestled with your thoughts. When I read that, I think David knows what I was going through. He has been lying awake at night wondering about who knows what.
But Joseph. David was a person. It's suddenly, he's not just this king. He's wrestling with thoughts just like you and me. He suddenly is a person that has a personality and worries.
So you could also do that with Joseph, right? I mean, Joseph, when he's in the pit, a friend of mine, you know the old days when we had screensavers on our computers, right? And they had the words scroll across the screen. I went to a meeting with him, and it just said, Joseph couldn't tell. And so after being there for about a half hour, I said, what's that about? He said, well, I'm reading Genesis, and I realized that when Joseph is in the pit, he didn't see the end of the story. Next week I came back for another meeting, and this screensaver said, I can't tell either. Psalm 91, whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. Elisha and the blind Aramaeans. Remember when these people were attacking, and Elisha's servant is going, oh no, we're all surrounded. He says, no, Lord, let him see what's going on. He sees these angels around. Cool story. Psalm 116. Psalm 116 is possibly, I'll be a little bit stronger than that, very possibly, it's part of a set of psalms called the Hallel, which is read during the celebration of the Passover. And so at the Last Supper, Psalm 116, there's a good chance that's the hymn that they sang before they left. So think about that later on when you get to a Bible. Read Psalm 116 and think about Jesus knowing where he was going and reading Psalm 116. It is eerie. I mean, it talks about, I love the Lord, for he heard my voice. But it talks about the cup of salvation. What shall I give back to God for the blessings he's poured out of me? I'll lift up the cup of salvation.
Well, much less, I call on him as long as I live, and he's walking towards death.
Yeah. It's chilling. The first time I realized this was what the hymn they sang, I thought, wow, you'd think that this is foreshadowing, like the person who wrote this book has a clue what's going on later on. Psalm 145, which the service this morning in the FAC was based on, Joshua crossing the Red Sea, one generation commends your works to another and told of your mighty acts. And then also Jonah waiting for Nineveh to be destroyed. The Lord is gracious and compassionate.
Back it up. The reason we put that psalm with Joshua is when he got across the river, it was a whole new generation. And they didn't know the stories. And that was the command. Tell them the stories. So, hence this psalm, tell the stories to the next generation, because they weren't keeping it up.
And then...
And Jonah?
Yeah.
Waiting for Nineveh?
It's amazing how many of my students who tell the story of Jonah don't do the last part where Jonah just leaves and he's kind of irritated with God. And that's the way it ends. It's a very unsatisfactory ending. Right? Okay, next.
But beside connecting with story, we wanted to do more so you can connect it with everyday life by repeating it, by memorizing it, by doing it with motions. Here's some people doing it with motions. Repetition. And you think of 150 of them. You don't have to learn them all today. Think long range. You've got 20, 30, 40, 50 years ahead of you. Okay, if you learn 3 a year... And really emphasize it, you get to 150 before. Think long range. But think long range. This is a lifetime ahead of us. Emphasize a couple so that they have a real lasting impact, like our family did with Psalm 133. And it still impacts us.
Yeah.
This is what our daughter did. She was part of the Calvin Gospel Choir, and she's in there somewhere. Anyway,
right in the middle.
Yeah. They went on a trip. One reason she joined the gospel choir, but anyway. So and her job, when you go on a trip, was everybody gets a job. Her job was to take attendance on the bus. So,
before you leave a rest area, make sure
that everybody's there. So she handed out lines to the Psalm 24.
So when she got on the bus, all she would have to do is say, "The earth is the Lord's," and then somebody else would say, and then all those repeated it, and everybody had a line, and every stop they repeated Psalm 24. So pretty soon, you know, then, and she said, you started to hear it in your ear, the voice that should come. So at one point, you know, you have this bass saying, "Who will stand in his holy place?" And who has clean hands? You know, so pretty soon you just, you know, but they would know who wasn't there.
And by the time they got to New Jersey, they all knew the whole song.
Well, and how can we incorporate that into our what we do at churches? Maybe in girls' club and boys' club, you're Brooklyn Gems cadets, maybe you will start integrating that. So it's a natural thing to do. And they did put it in one of their programming.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, okay, let's do Psalm 24. They all knew where their part was and could fill in for the person who wasn't there because they all knew it. Psalm 133, we did it at our church, our sanctuary. And I don't know if you can
see
it.
Can you see that? Can you maybe hit one of the banks of lights, Tyler?
It doesn't. The papers on the side are how good and pleasant it is when God's people lived in unity. And we put it all the way around the sanctuary for a psalm fest that we had. And, yeah, how good and pleasant when God's people live together in unity. For there is his blessing, even life forevermore, I think was the whole thing we used. Surround yourself. Put it on a classroom wall. Surround yourself with those words. Psalms for All Season, you got to put in a plug for the Psalm for All Season book, which is really very good. We've used it as family devotional. We happen to have a couple copies, so hauled it out, and it's been really good as a family devotional because the psalm is listed there, and then we'll page through and find a song that we can all look at and then move on to the next one.
It was really pretty cool. We did a Psalm 23 with the Shepherd Me, O God, Shepherd Me, O God, and so, yeah, that's the one, and we all sang that around the table. It was really very cool.
And it was interesting because that Sunday they chose that also in our church service. So it's kind of a neat thing. But anyway, other songs that do have psalms, step by step, is Psalm 63. Shout to the Lord is Psalm 98. Keep going. Often better is one day, Psalm 84. Psalm 51, create in me a clean heart. We need to start making those references. These are psalms. They're not just songs. It's from the psalms. We have done the song Don't Be Afraid, and I believe it's now
number
in the
30
book.
In the Lift Up Your Hearts. We didn't realize that when we put this slide up here. But
mix that song with Psalm 46, where it's a reading, and then after two verses you stop and sing the song. Reading, song.
Actually, every time it says Selah in the
Selah.
Song,
Selah is
the song. Insert Don't Be Afraid, and it's a really... This is actually a picture
slide.
Of our kids singing it. The boy and girl on the right there, Mason and Audrey, their mom was at that time suffering from cancer. She's a young mom, she got cancer. And to have these kids in front of church singing Don't Be Afraid during the Psalm Fest, which Amy helped plan, was just a really powerful moment for the congregation.
She was facing chemo, surgery, and there's her kids singing Don't Be Afraid. It took on its special meaning for everybody. And that song, by the way, is, well, now it's in the Red Book, but this is where it was from before. Interesting thing that we've seen, too, is read Psalms in two different versions. One verse one in the NRSV, verse one in the Message, or to whatever two versions you want, and read one, one, two, two, three, three. You can do that in your church sanctuary. You can do it whenever you're studying a Bible verse. Even in Sunday school, it would be kind of cool to let the kids play with that. Family devotional, as we thought about the Psalms, if we didn't want to insert it into a curriculum, how are we going to get this into the hands of people? And a devotional seemed the best thing for us that we came up with. And we've been working on this and are still working on it. And on your handout, that is the end pages. I don't know which number. What are we? The last four pages? Or two, four?
Oh, yeah.
So what we did is we took a psalm, and we, I'm not exactly sure what order it's in because we've been revising. First, the idea is you have the psalm, and I think I just abbreviated that in the handout. And then we wanted a family to kind of sit down and do devotions, but not just do a psalm, next psalm, psalm, psalm. Because then you don't retain it. It's just kind of blip, 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 blip. So what we did is this, you take a psalm, and then there's four devotionals written on the same psalm, trying to approach it from different angles. So, you know, Joseph in the pit might be one angle to approach it. It's an alphabet poem. How do you approach it from four different ways? So a family that does devotions could do this four times, which would probably be pretty good if they did it in a week, and hit the same psalm all week, thinking about that psalm, and maybe that would keep it, have it a little more integrated into their lives. So that's a sample of what we have, and then on the end, we also decided that Bob definitely thinks there should be some notes for adults, so that if they do want to get into it a little more deeply, they can. Because there are some things you can't do with a family that adults can deal with, or they can explain it if they wanted to have more information. So this is what we're currently working on, and it's in process. But yes, it gives you an idea of that.
11 psalms done?
We're not going to try and do all 150 because that's, you know, a lot. But, yeah.
12?
Something like that.
That's our current project, and someday maybe it'll be done. But that gives you an idea of what direction we're heading with that. Art is another neat thing to do. The cool thing about art, and this is from one of the kids in our church, is that we would hang it on the wall, and I can't even see what it says on the bottom.
Psalm 86, verse 6. Hear my prayer, O God, O Lord, listen to my cry for mercy.
Yeah. If you hang it up, it gives you something to talk about. So when you have guests in your church, what do you say to the guests? Well, this is what we're doing. Or if the kid is there, you can say, well, what are you talking about in this picture? It really helps to bring conversation about the concept up. So keep going.
I'm thinking this is the tomb. Jesus coming out of the tomb.
It's upside down.
Yeah, it is upside down. Well, but I think the picture was drawn upside down.
It was a young child who can't read.
So?
Because, well, except you put help. Anyway, this one is made by Karis. Karis Walters, a believer. So, and this is, hear my prayer, O Lord, listen to my cry for mercy. And you see all the people crying for mercy. Again, this is what they, our kids have done. God will help you if you need help. Yeah.
I like the tears of mercy on the right.
Yeah, I think we have another child who bounced off those tears for mercy. Is that coming up? Maybe not. This is more on the Timothy Botts things too. Do not fret because of evil. You see how the evil is behind bars. Men trust in the Lord and do good. So just playing with letters and colors and things like that. Just kind of fun. We also did this in an intergenerational event where people of all ages worked on Psalm 107, and we used scratch art. And you can buy, I didn't believe it would work. None of the people suggested it. But you can buy scratch art that isn't happy colors underneath. So you can buy it so it's clear, and then you can put your own color behind it so it's not rainbow. And we would scratch it off, and after they examined the psalm, the people did scratch art on what they heard in the psalm, because the psalm has dark and happy, dark and sad times that are come back to the God, a path of hope. So that worked. This we've also done was you write the words, we had them examine a psalm, write it on a 10x10 canvas, and we did this in groups, and then they put their name on a leaf and put that on top of the words from the Bible. So that they were part, I think, of what the Bible pieces were. And we hung it up. Suddenly we had some artwork, put it in on display. And when you look at this individually, they're not great, but they're still they're putting them together. It's art, it's ours, and it's still in the back hallway. And some people said to me even a couple weeks ago that when they walk out of that room and they see that, it just warms their heart to know that they were part of that and that it belongs to them. So it had more lasting impact than just that event.
We've done this with our church and also with another church. Given them Psalm 107, shown them what the structure is like. That's that episodic psalm we talked about before. And then put them in groups, intergenerational groups, and said, okay, now you write your church's version of Psalm 107, of these verses. And so so here's the way 14th Street Church's Psalm 107 starts out. Hey, 14th Street family, the Lord is good. He loves us, always. Everyone, listen up and join us. We know God is good. He brought us from many places and made us one family through His love. Sometimes we had trouble figuring out what to do. Others had problems making ends meet. We called on God and He helped figure things out. Praise Him. So that, in fact, it was when we went to another church. Our church is pretty used to doing intergenerational things, right? We've been doing it for a while, so it's not something that's difficult. We went to another church to do a workshop. They were not used to doing intergenerational things, and they were really skeptical.
Very sick.
They looked at us like, you know, really, you want us to do this? This is not a good idea. And they had so much fun with this.
With writing it.
Yeah. With writing it.
We kept calling them back and calling them back. They said, no, we're not ready. And it was the writing that really got them into it. And then they used it throughout their whole church year, which we were surprised.
Talked about this already. So write Psalm 151, okay? If you were going to write a psalm, what would it be like? There's other ways of having kids
and
write.
And that's in the handout, so you can keep going.
Okay, well, So give kids prompts, right? So Psalm 100, make a joyful list of the Lord of all your lands. So first say something nice about God. That's what you should do for your first line. So you're basically trying to write the same psalm in your own words. Psalms have structure, right? Synonymous structure, where the first second line restates the first line, or antithetical structure, where the second line is the opposite of the first line. So, for the Lord knows the ways of the righteous, but the ways of the ungodly shall perish. You can play with that sort of thing. You'll say, okay, let's do something in synonymous structure. Let's say it twice. Now let's do something in antithetical structure. Or ABC Psalms, they choose words or phrases.
This is a very cool book that uses a lot of artwork and other other people's. It's excerpts from books that match the Psalms. The phrases from Philippians. What if you did it with a psalm? And your church groups, or even a church classroom, could come up with a book with their own art and their own words to a psalm and making it. And now you can do Snapfish and all those books. You can put one together and keep it in that classroom forever. It could be really cool. And psalms are available in literature. This is a book, Erdman's has it, Psalms for Children, Young Children. I think I have listed all these books. What Does the Sky Say? This is a great one, too, by Erdman's, based on Psalm 119. This one really pushes you. Psalm 19, yeah.
Yeah, the heavens declare the glory of God. What does the sky say?
Sing praise. Now, the interesting thing is all these are happy. Psalm 148, 150, they're happy, but that's what sells, so that's what you're going to find in commercial.
Yeah, not going to be a whole lot of Psalm 88 picture books.
No. This one's interesting because you have the Happy Psalms, but it also has Spanish and English on the same page. So that's got some nice potential. And Runaway Bunny.
Do we want to do that?
Sure. Why don't we do that and then we'll go.
Okay, what page does it start on? There it is. Okay. This is a book from 1940 or something like that, maybe older than that, Margaret Wise Brown. Once there was a little bunny who wanted to run away. So he said to his mother, "I'm running away." "If you run away," said his mother, "I will run after you, for you are my little bunny." "If you run after me," said the little bunny, "I will become a fish in a trout stream, and I will swim away from you." "If you become a fish in a trout stream," said his mother, "I will become a fisherman, and I will fish for you." "If you become a fisherman," said the little bunny, "I will become a rock on a mountain high above you." "If you become a rock on a mountain high above me," said his mother, "I will become a mountain climber, and I will climb to where you are." "If you become a mountain climber," said the little bunny, "I will be a crocus in a hidden garden." "If you become a crocus in a hidden garden," said his mother, "I will be a gardener, and I will find you." "If you're a gardener and find me," said the little bunny, "I will be a bird and fly away from you." "If you become a bird and fly away from me," said his mother, "I will be a tree that you come home to." "If you become a tree," said the little bunny, "I will become a little sailboat and I will sail away from you." "If you become a sailboat and sail away from me," said his mother, "I will become the wind and blow you to where I want you to go." "If you become the wind and blow me," said the little bunny, "I'll join a circus and fly away on a flying trapeze." "If you go on a flying trapeze," said his mother, "I'll be a tightrope walker and I'll walk across the air to you."
If you become a tightrope walker and walk across the air, said the bunny, I'll become a little boy and run into a house. If you become a little boy and run into a house, said the mother bunny, I'll become your mother and catch you in my arms and hug you. Shucks, said the bunny, I might just as well stay where I am and be your little bunny. And so he did. Have a carrot, said the mother bunny. Psalm 139 says the same thing. O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You hem me in behind and before. You have laid your hand on me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, Lord. You hem me in behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you're there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, as many of you did to get here, even there, your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. For the night will shine like the day, for the darkness is as light to you. I don't know if Margaret Wise Brown had Psalm 139 in mind when she wrote that song, but God is the mother bunny who keeps chasing after us. Psalm 23, goodness and mercy will follow me. Oh, this is not follow. It will chase after you. Goodness and mercy will chase after you all the days of your life. We've got a few minutes for questions or comments. You can put the lights on again. Thanks, Tom.
Can I see the slide again of the synonymous structure one?
Yes. Do you have any idea what number that is?
Nope.
There it is.
You mentioned a psalm. Yes. I'm interested in knowing what that was. I don't know if it's too big to talk about. Or
we got 4 minutes. We got a worship renewal grant from the Institute of Christian Worship in our church, which you should consider. It's on the website. The deadline is
January 10th.
So we got a whole year. and that gave us a little bit of money to play with some ideas, and we decided as a congregation to work on the Psalms for a year. And so we just went to generational events around the Psalms. We had sermons on the Psalms. We did art on the Psalms.
We had a series of speakers come out and talk about the Psalms in song, contemporary song, in gospel, in
songs around the world.
From around the world. Each speaker came on a Sunday evening and talked about how the Psalms were reflected in that genre of music. So we really kind of immersed ourselves in the Psalms for that year. And then in May, we had we had a morning worship service that we really emphasized the Psalms during that worship service and built it all around what we had done throughout the year. And after that, we had a time of we had a dinner, and then we came back and gathered again, and the congregation stood up, and we gave them an opportunity to talk about what they had learned. And 6 or 7 people did stand up and talked about how now they read the Psalms, and if the Psalm wasn't speaking to them today, maybe they put themselves, they said, I read it, and I say, well, who is this Psalm speaking to today? Which is also neat for high school kids to hear adults talk about this. Who else could be saying this, not me? And if I still can't figure it out, I just say, okay, Lord, I'm going to move to the next one. Because some of them, it doesn't fit you that day. But it really brought the Psalms to our whole church community. And then we did some of the artwork with that Psalm year, too.
What's the name of the grant again that you said?
The Worship Renewal Grant from the Calvin Institute of Christian Worship.
Do you have to be American?
No.
No.
Nope.
And it's been now 2 years since we finished that grant year. And the Psalms have a much larger place in our weekly worship than they did before that. And we had a pastor who was very open to using the Psalms before that, too. But it's just become part of our vocabulary.
Mentioned a few things about middle school and high schoolers. Could you address either your children when they were high schoolers or those in your church? what things really appeal to them in terms of studying Psalms, learning Psalms, using Psalms? In terms of the high school age group, how can they best engage in the Psalms?
From a developmental perspective, okay, you asked a 10-minute answer. Fortunately, you know, I'm a professional. I can do 10 minutes in 30 minutes. Developmentally, these kids are thinking, God knows me individually, right? This is one of the first times in their lives they realize they have a personal past and a personal future. So that personal connection to God is really starting to open up for these kids. And you see that as a teacher, right? With fifth graders, they just, I go to church, right? God is cool, right? Like that. Middle schoolers and young high schoolers are really on fire for God. Because for the first time in their life, they're actually making a choice. The menu's really small. It's like, what your parents believe, and that's it. But they actually do make a choice. And so this gives, if we connect this with, it's God knows you. And you can talk to God personally. I think that's a connection that's going to get to them. So if they see it as something that these old people do, then that's not going to be much. But they see it as a personal thing. So that's why I like that Psalm 51 exercise with, what do you think David would have written? Now let's look at this psalm. And that, I think, can be a way of helping them see that these psalms are real people saying real things in real situations. Thank you for coming. Have a great evening.